Welcome to another edition of the Team Turnbuckle Podcast on the IB Network's podcast feed. My name is Ravishing Ronell Tinsley. With me, as always, the shooter Sam Howe. Sammy, how you doing?
If I were any better, I'd have to be twins just to handle it all.
Nice. Unfortunately, Chief Keith Fleming is on assignment, as they like to say on other things. And technically he is. He's, you know, I don't call him the hardest working man in podcast land for nothing. He's actually working on another of the, four or five that he does every single week. So we appreciate him so much. And before we get into today's show, big shout out to Brittany Fleming, Mrs. Head of the Table, as well as shout out to Cody Rhodes, if you're listening. Brittany Fleming just so happened to drop our podcast to Cody Rhodes while they were at the same hair salon, and it was very awesome. Cody, I do hope you take the time to, you know, listen to us, and I am sure you're a busy man, but Brittany, like I had put in the IB sports group, you are the real MVP, and I tip my cap to you, miss.
I mean, and friend of the pod, Cody Rhodes, just joking about that. Please don't anybody flame us for that. But yeah, I mean, I think that if I said this on Twitter, I think that if anybody should appreciate somebody who married up, somebody who outkicked their coverage, as he likes to say, I think it would be Cody Rhodes, which is not a shot at Cody so much as a strong compliment to Brandi Rhodes.
Understood. So that was a very, very exciting. You know, I definitely lost my crap for a good 15, 30 seconds behind that. So super exciting. But we're going to go and get right on into the show, and we're going to go off the top rope. I know this is a topic that may not be unfamiliar to most people, but it's in the news again that Lita on her Twitch stream revealed that she did not want to go through with the live sex celebration segment with Edge after he won the World Heavyweight Championship in 2006. She was told she would be fired if she didn't do the segment, even though many other superstars, including John Cena, Matt Hardy, and Edge, and more, attempted to put a halt to this. But because Vince loved it, the segment happened. And because of her hesitation to do it, she believes it was the reason she was buried on her way out of WWE. Now, we got to talk about this in our own message thread. And honestly, I did see that segment, even though this was kind of one of those times where, like Keith at the time, I was out of the loop as what was going on, but I was always a huge Lita fan. So just to see this and then hear about this well after the fact just kind of leaves an incredibly disgusting taste in my mouth. Sam, I was hoping that you would be able to shed a little more light on this for not only me, but for our listeners.
So yeah, it was really like when it came up, it's not a great time for WWE in general, at least in my opinion. I'm sure there are people who I think they were doing very well financially, but it was a time where I didn't watch a lot. There was the period between when Eddie Guerrero died and when Chris Benoit died that WWE really didn't cover itself in glory. I felt like there was a lot of like bone deep cruelty. And that was really what this reminded me of. And that wrestlers need a union, but I'll get to that in a second. They did the sort of real life writes the plot where Lita and Edge started having a relationship, as you know, shit happens. They decided to turn it into a storyline when Matt Hardy went online and sort of put his personal business out there, and they turned Edge and Lita heel. Ironically, it ended up making Edge a huge star. Sounds like from all, like, Lita's been pretty candid that it made her life miserable. Like fans, and I feel like this probably doesn't have to be said as much now, is like, don't fucking be shitty to people in real life. And like, she just got an endless like ending harassment. And the sort of the culmination. And again, I'm glad that there's been a sort of a second act where there's been a lot more appreciation for Lita and Trish Stratus, though Trish Stratus got a much better send-off. Lita's send-off was she wrestled a retirement match at Survivor Series 2006 with Mickie James, and she lost. Obviously, she's retiring. And she said that she was retiring because she was fed up with like the 18 months of harassment that she'd gotten from fans. And they then did a comedy segment with Crime Time, which like is its own fucking problematic gimmick, where they brought out a box of stuff that they had stolen from her that included like her yeast infection medicine, her personal massager, which is like a vibrator, a pair of her panties, and then one that they'd stolen from her. And then once that had been the case, they sold, I'm actually gonna have to look at our text chain to get the exact verbiage right. It is exactly the kind of highbrow creative that you would expect from Vince McMahon, where they said, it's the only thing that was left, it's cheap, it's wide, you can put your head in it, it's Lita's box.
Oh.
And yeah, I mean, and Trish Stratus, as I said, and this is not a knock on Trish, but Trish Stratus got this wonderful send-off when she had left shortly, you know, earlier in that year. And then to do this with Lita is just, I mean, it was disrespectful. It was shitty then. And the attitude then was like, geez, like this was, it was poorly received then. It is only aged like milk. Lita didn't, it goes without saying that she didn't deserve it. It speaks to, you know, that sometimes we joke, but about the way that people of color are treated on WWE television, but we joke about it in large part because I think that people would not be as receptive if we were just pissed off about it, which, you know, it is that there's a point where like you can't, there's only so many ways you can be critical of the WWE and for the way that they treat people who aren't white and straight. And
men. Hill.
Yeah. And that was, you know, and I don't think we talk about enough about the awful history that they have with women. And it was just, it's really, I think that the way that Lita inspired a lot of female wrestlers, you know, there's that very famous picture of AJ in tears meeting Lita, is that, you know, I think that Lita doesn't get enough credit for blazing trails that she did. I also was thinking about this, Medusa, when she threw the WWF at the time women's champion in the trash can, she was blackballed way longer than Hulk Hogan was for the Hulk comments that he made. And she was way more apologetic about it than Hogan has been. And I just think it speaks to the weird mutant value system of the WWE. And I think that we often hear, you know, comparisons of the WWE to actors or to athletes. And those are some of the most powerful unions in the world. And I think that the fact that Lita was made to, like, basically told, like, if you don't do this very graphic thing, like, they really stripped down. Like, and, you know, if you don't get naked and, you know, debase yourself, we're going to fire you. Like, try that at any company in the world. And you're going to be dealing with a lawsuit. Like, we've been dealing with a reckoning for this. And I think that it's something that the WWE needs to answer for. I think they need to do a better job. AEW is newer, obviously, but like the wrestling business has done a better job. But yeah, the WWE really needs to answer for this, I think, honestly. I think they owe Lita an apology.
Honestly, absolutely they do. And it speaks to, and just another part of it before, you know, we move on, it speaks to something that I am going to again address when we get later on in the show, is part of it is how fans are. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love being a part of the wrestling community. I guess in it, by extension, I'm part of the IWC, which unfortunately leaves me feeling really greasy and disgusting, because a lot of the way the fans act online, and I'm not trying to, you know, sit here and, you know, pretend that, you know, I'm this person of great morals or whatever, but it's just some of the crap you read on stories, you know, lends itself a lot to what you were talking about with, if it's not hetero white men, there's all kinds of crap that just gets talked about you, either, you know, debasing women, debasing these athletes. And I mean, quite honestly, a lot of these athletes, even the women, would kick your average guy's ass if it really came down to it.
Shayna Baszler, I think, could probably
for sure.
You lined up like 99 dudes,
kind of girlfriend you like had in a bar
fight. She was a legitimate MMA fighter.
Yeah, and she was really good.
Yeah.
I mean, she just so happened to be fighting at a time when there was Ronda Rousey and maybe a handful.
Well, she actually started before. That was part, but she was also like before Ronda Rousey sort of came around. But yeah, I mean, it's you're right. I mean, they're incredible athletes and badasses in their own right.
And, you know, I honestly think that at the time when Ronda had, you know, risen to prominence, Shayna was at that second tier out of those top 3-4 women who were vying for the title. Shayna was right there on the outside of that, you know, so legitimate badass woman. But again, you know, I just not trying to, you know, beat a dead horse, but I just think that we as men, as wrestling fans, have to do better, especially, you know, with how we speak about, you know, these pro athletes.
Well, I think that there's, and again, not like, I'm going to try to like, not to get too, like, I don't want to get too into politics. I don't want to alienate people, but like one thing that I really work on is like, would I, and it's actually something that I've like how I conduct myself in the workplace. Like, would I say or do this to a man? And like, well, no, I wouldn't. Then I don't do it to a woman because that's just asking for trouble. Like, I think that there's like, if you wouldn't insult a male wrestler about something, probably don't say it about a female wrestler and vice versa. I will say like one other thing that I'd forgotten, like it is some of it. Like, I feel like the WWE did encourage it. Like, we had a Divas Championship for until 2016. Like, imagine April 3rd, 2000. I checked because I was like, is it 2015 or 2014? Like, imagine if you had like Beefcake Championship. Like, that's the same sort of thing that I see when I see Divas. And it's just, I mean, I get like, it's the same, you know, there's the Knockouts and and Impact, and like, even that feels like, just call them women's wrestlers. Like, just call it the women's title. Like,
there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, like, just please, like, I get it for branding purposes. Like, I do understand that. But, like, also, the Divas Championship looked like a Lisa Frank thing. Like, I don't know if you remember that, but it was like a butterfly.
It looked like a butterfly, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's right. Like, yes, those, yes, okay, yes, yes, yes.
It's like, it's kind of hard to, and, like, I actually really like the old, like, we've talked about title designs. I really like the old women's, like, the red and black women's title. The red and gold. That, like, Stephanie McMahon and Trish Stratus, like, that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a great title. And it's just like, come on, y'all. Like, and it's really, I think that the one thing I will say to give the WWE credit, and I don't want to get into too much about it, is that they've really, you know, realized, like, oh, we have this amazing, diverse talent to roster of women that we've never, that really haven't been assembled in any American promotion, and have leaned into it. And I think that it's benefited, like, the women's wrestling in the WWE is better than it's ever been. And there's just nothing but good that comes of that. And I think that Absolutely. They have, yeah. I mean, I think that you have like a really cool, diverse, like, yeah, you have people like Bayley and Sasha and Charlotte who are workhorses. And then you have people like Alexa Bliss, who are also, you know, really, you know, really great characters, and Carmella, who are great characters. And there's not this divide of plastic, you know, oh, these are people who are here for their parents, and these are people here for who are workers.
Absolutely. I think like
a lot of that sexism has dropped away.
And that's really awesome. I mean, it's just, it just so happens that a bunch of these very insanely talented women happened to be really good looking at the same time. So,
I mean, that's sort of like one of the things though about like wrestling is that like there aren't a whole lot of people who aren't conventionally attractive like that. And it's something that we talk about where like it's part of why people like Samoa Joe or Kevin Owens stand out is that these guys who aren't like, you know, ridiculously handsome Roman Reigns, or, you know, it's not a knock on Kevin Owens, but like they're like the WWE roster is full of people who are in like inhumanly amazing shape and are ridiculously good looking. So, yeah.
All right. Not to take too much time on that. Thank you for your thoughts on that. Next up on the off the top rope, Bobby Lashley on his Twitter announced that when he's done with his feud with the quote unquote Brock wannabe Riddle, that he actually wants to take on the real Brock Lesnar whenever, wherever. I love that over this past year that they've given Bobby a proper push, but with Lesnar currently not under contract, is there any possibility of this match actually going down?
I think so. I was laughing like when the verbiage of once I'm done with the Brock Lesnar wannabe, like I get why we have MVP is the mouthpiece for like Riddle's really not like Daniel Bryan is about the furthest thing from Brock Lesnar, but like very close second is actually no, Matt Riddle is the furthest thing that I can see from like this laid back like stoner who like really seems to be into pro wrestling, supposed to Brock, who like hates everyone except for like his family and Paul Heyman, weirdly, and just like likes to shoot guns and live on his ranch and is just like hyper intense. But I, you know, there's a part of me that thinks that Lashley wouldn't have said this. And this was like when he came back, everyone was sort of like, this was where we thought the WWE was going, was that the, you know, the inevitable Lashley Lesnar match. And I mean, if they want to bring Lesnar back and have him put Lashley over, I'm all for it. Go for it. Cool. It'll get Lashley more over.
Absolutely. I mean, I would love to see Brock do something like that. I mean, and at this point, I'm sure that he wouldn't mind taking a mercenary one-off contract or a, you know, 3-week contract, whatever the case may be. I don't really know how their contracts work. But I'm sure he wouldn't mind taking a decent paycheck to come back and do this, if he, especially if he's not coming back on his part-time or semi-full-time basis.
I mean, I could even see him coming back for that, you know, coming in and doing a, you know, the, because as much as we talk like, yeah, the Lashley feud would be cool, but the obvious one is the Roman Reigns one. And I think that if you're going to bring Brock back, you know, cool, fine. Like, do, like, we know, we, I think they probably have WrestleMania, some idea of it and what they're going to do with Roman. But like, and again, I think that at this point, WrestleMania is going to be not WrestleMania. It's going to be like last year in that, I hope. I mean, I just don't think I could be wrong. I hope that the world's back, more back to normal. But like, yeah, you know, if you're going to have Brock Lesnar come back, great. Have him wrestle Lashley this year and let Lashley get a rub. And then when you have people do the Brock Roman match where Brock's a face and Roman's a heel next year, do it in fucking that LA.
Can you imagine? Oh my God. Face Brock.
He's chaotic. Good. Brock, a lot of Brock's, he was a face at one point.
Yeah, I know. I remember that slightly.
It was like he turned like there was at the night after WrestleMania, I think it was the night after Mania 31 actually, where he like F5'd King and Lawler or Cole and Lawler. But like everyone was like, what the hell? I love Brock Lesnar now.
All right. So our last item off the top rope, it was just announced on Instagram that the Dark Side of the Ring series on Vice will tackle the loose cannon angle with Flying Brian Pillman. Are you looking forward to or planning on watching? Actually, I realize that's a stupid question. Of course, we're all going to be watching this. What are you hoping they're going to be able to cover or maybe go more at length about when it comes to this?
There was a episode of 83 Weeks that Eric Bischoff did where they talked about this. I would be interested. Like, there's so much story there. Were you watching? I mean, you're a few years older than me.
I was out of the loop for the loose cannon angle.
I was like almost turning 10 when it happened.
What year was this?
96.
Okay, I was just really getting out on my own. So I think I was poor person who didn't have cable yet, so it was probably the reason I was not watching wrestling.
I mean, a lot of people weren't watching wrestling at that point, bro.
I do remember this was like literally post Monday Night War, post the acquisition.
This is all pre-invasion. This is like right at the early days of the Monday Night Wars. This is like when Nitro had just started. Raw was like they were in the new generation thing. Like, and that's part of the, I don't know how well it's one of those angles where like, and I'm going to make a connection with Brian himself, is that I remember hearing people talk about like how like, he was such a high flyer. And I never saw Brian Pillman matches until I'd seen Rey Mysterio. And so I was like, really? This is
where where's the flying?
Yeah, I was like,
this guy's jumping all over the damn place.
And like, Rey Mysterio is doing things that I didn't think were physically possible. Like, and that's not a knock on Brian Pillman. It's just, this is the eventual evolution, is that like, kids, I'm sure that if you watched a Rey Mysterio match now, you would like, from 96, you'd be like, neat. What am I supposed to be so impressed by? And it like made my head explode at 10 years old. But the I don't know how familiar you are with the loose cannon angle, but like, he was doing things like, he had a match with Kevin Sullivan where he came out. It was a I quit match, or it was a respect match, and it was a strap match, and you won by saying I respect you. And the match happened, and Pillman like grabbed the mic after a couple of minutes and said, I respect you, Booker man. And like, because Sullivan was the booker at the time, it was really mm-hmm. like baseball, and like, he was doing a really good job of selling it. Like, he grabbed Bobby Heenan, you know, had a history of neck problems, and he grabbed him, and Heenan on camera went, what the fuck are you doing? Like, just got him a little bit of trouble. But I'm interested in seeing it. Like, the story was, and again, a lot of this is like dirt sheet type stuff, was that he got his release from WCW so that he could do the loose cannon thing and like go to ECW and really like work the boys. And I'm interested in seeing, because I've heard it from Eric Bischoff's perspective, and the story kind of was that you know, Bischoff got worked, and obviously no one wants to be like, yeah, he played me like a fool, I was an idiot. And Bischoff, you know, I not that Bischoff would lie, and not that he wouldn't, just that I would be interested to hear about people. I would hope to hear from his son, possibly his wife, Melanie. I would just be interested in people who were there, people who were friends with him, because I think that it was an angle that was ahead of its time, and they've done a really good job with most of them. I think that I'm trying to remember the episode. There was the one about the Road Warriors. I didn't think they did a good job. I thought it was just sort of like shallow, like I didn't feel like they
uncovered anything like super crazy. Like there wasn't anything there that like blew your brains out. Like,
and I didn't feel like they got
saddened you.
Yeah. Like the Benoit one where they really like, which brought me to tears a couple times.
Cried like a baby.
Yeah. And, or the Owen Hart one where like, there were things that came to light that I was like, oh, didn't like, no wonder Martha Hart was so pissed. Things like that. And I thought that overall, I'm excited to see them do the New Jack one, which like is imminently watchable.
I still have forgotten to get around to watching that one.
I'll talk to you more about that one off camera, because I don't want this to turn into a 3-hour podcast. I don't want to torment people.
All right, so we're going to get into the superlatives of the week, and I'm going to start with the wrestler on the rise, and this one I'm going to go first, especially based off of what we were talking about with the fans, with the Lita angle. My wrestler on the rise is Sonya Deville. I am happy that, you know, she is back on camera. I don't know necessarily when or if she'll be getting back in the ring, but just the fact that she must have feel comfortable enough in absolving the thing with her stalker breaking into her house and all of the emotional trauma that must probably still follow her behind that. Just the fact that she's decided to give it another go back on SmackDown. I'm just happy to see her. Sam, who's your wrestler on the rise?
I went with Scrap Iron Adam Pearce.
You know, I almost did too. I wanted to highlight Sonya.
Yeah, no, I think it's great. And Sonya's another one of those people who, like, I don't want to sound ghoulish here because, like, yeah, the trauma of what happened to her, like, I feel like that's really upsetting. Like, I don't know. I've actually, you live in LA. You meet some people. Like, I'm not going to be name droppy. Like, I think it's kind of lame, but I've met some people, and the whole thing of like being a public figure, I don't know how you cope with that, because people, like, I don't know about you. Like, if somebody comes up to me and I don't recognize them, I'm like, oh, like, I'm comfortable being like, do I know you? Whereas, like, if you're Sonya Deville, or I mean, anybody, any pro wrestler, like in the WWE, somebody, you're going to have people come up to you all the time. You're like, I don't know who the fuck you are. And so, like, the whole, you know, personal life, you know, that stalker thing, obviously the personal aspect of that, and like the invasion of privacy and safety, but also, like, she was starting to hit her stride in a way that she'd not, and that she's really talented. And so I hope that she will continue. I picked the person that she is shadowing in kayfabe, Scrap Iron Adam Pearce, who was always a dude who was a good, like, as somebody who really came of age in the mid aughts, you know, the aughts independent scene, you know, watched a lot of Ring of Honor. I might have mentioned once or twice. Scrap Iron Adam Pearce, who I love that nickname. He was always a really good wrestler. He was the head booker of ROH for a time. I can't believe that in 2021 he's getting a shot at, you know, there's no chance he'll win. But, like, hell yeah, man. Like, I also think that it speaks to the Roman title reign that he has defended the title against a tag team wrestler in Jey Uso, a guy who's sort of not gotten his due, but all these people are extremely talented, obviously. But have sort of been not the kind of blazing stars, whereas you compare, and this is not a knock on Drew McIntyre, but Drew's wrestled people like Seth Rollins and Randy Orton, and Roman Reigns is having, you know, a career year wrestling more underserved talent in Jey Uso, Kevin Owens, and now Adam Pearce, who I think is a great choice to have, because he's going to end up, you know, people are expecting him to be like an authority figure, and people are going to be surprised. He's a really good wrestler.
Yeah, that will play out great on screen, especially to those who have been out of the loop or don't really know his history. Like, he's going to get on there, and, you know, it's not like this is going to be like a completely one-sided affair. I imagine that they're going to allow him to get some offense in there. Something will happen which will allow him to get a good offensive burst in there. And, you know, before Roman cuts his legs out from under him, we're going to get that small glimpse of, oh my God, Adam Pearce is about to, oh, he kicked out. It's going to play great.
You know, he is not, I mean, I'm checking now because I don't know when he stopped. I don't know if he did technically stop wrestling. I mean, he's been wrestling for 25 years. I think that, he has not really wrestled full time in 7 years. He's been a coach, trainer. He's also wrestled, I'm sorry, not wrestled, but like, the other authority figures who were wrestlers. You know, you had guys like John Laurinaitis, who had not wrestled in 10 years, you know, 12 years. I think that it's actually, you know, most of the audience is not aware of who he is. They just see him as an NPC, and he's about to, like, I'm excited for that.
Yeah, totally. I'm just happy about the way that it played out, how Roman is literally carrying it and is like, this is my show. We're going to play this my way. And I want my little bit of revenge on you, and I'm going to get a sanctioned match to do it. So I think it's fantastic. So why don't you tell us who your wrestler on the slide is?
I'm going with Sami Zayn. I don't know why you would have the Intercontinental Champion in that gauntlet match for the world title. In kayfabe, I get, obviously it's COVID. You don't want to have a whole lot of people. You know, I understand it, but like in kayfabe, it's like, you know, guys, really, we couldn't hold somebody else. Like, even a tag team, really, you know, if you wanted to
throw an Otis in there.
Yeah. And he literally anybody, there was somebody that you could have, and then to have him lose is sort of a joke. I don't know why the WWE doesn't see what they have in him. I think that he's incredibly talented. I mean, there's nobody that I would be like, oh, they suck, they shouldn't, you know, the people I don't like, but yeah, I mean, Sami Zayn, and especially being the Intercontinental Champion, like, why would you dog him out like that?
Seriously. I get that he just came off of that, and what, he had one rematch? Technically two, because no, just the one rematch, correct?
Sounds right. I've his title reign has been treated like such a joke that I've honestly kind of checked out, which will happen from time to time. You know, and it just bums me out to see it. Like, yeah, I think he's at a rematch. I don't, but he's in general been treated as a joke. Like, that is, I don't mean like treated as a joke as in like not given the consideration he deserves. I mean that his character has literally been a comedy character that they laugh at. And
and especially now they have, he's got his videographers to go into the conspiracy theory. Although I get that the conspiracy theory was always his thing, but it's like, you're right. They have made it kind of laughable, which is, you know, disappointing, because Sammy's a hell of a worker.
And the whole, like, a losing streak gimmick in the WWE likes to do it is never a good look. Just not, because you, like, no matter how entertaining somebody is, they're still losing matches.
Indeed. So, face of the week. This week, my face of the week was Keith Lee. He put on not one, but two good matches. They had him tag team with Sheamus, and that was just amazing. Have you ever seen anybody explode a single turnbuckle the way he did in that tag team match?
It was a great spot. I love that match. I think that I almost had him on as my wrestler on the slide because they're sort of shuffling him off at the main event. But he's so good, man. He's so good.
He really is. I hate seeing, and it's one of those things that, you know, I'm in a ton of wrestling, well, not a ton, but, you know, a handful of wrestling groups. And a lot of that stuff shows up in my feed. Fortunately, I don't really go looking into many of them. I mean, there's the Asylum, which I'll actually physically just go into and just look around, just because, you know, I dig looking at people's collectibles and such. But so many other groups will just like put things up, and like so many people are still like fat shaming and just like don't appreciate the athleticism of a Keith Lee. And it's like, I don't understand. But then again, you know, there's seven and a half billion people on the planet, and none of us are going to think the same exact thoughts. So I guess some weirdo out there has to be both a wrestling fan and a fat shamer.
I mean, it would be one thing too if like he weren't ridiculously athletic. Like it just goes back to like the whole thing of like, I mean, hey, at least they're fat shaming, you know, a guy instead of a girl. But I'm joking aside, but like Keith Lee is like able to do things that, again, not just aren't like something that the average person his size can't do, but like the average person can't do. And also like he's charismatic enough that he's just amazing. Like,
I love the look on his face when he after he exploded that turnbuckle, like, holy crap. And then, you know, afterwards him and Sheamus, you know, got into it. They wound up having a match. Keith Lee goes over on him, and now him and Sheamus are besties as well. To me, that
Sheamus starts tag teams. He feuds and then he tag teams. He loves being, he fights because he loves.
Yeah. Well,
actually my face of the week was, I have a thing for sort of like very basic building blocks, like baby faces, like good guys. I like when faces do the right thing. It's going back to Sami Zayn. One of my favorite moments of, and I'm going to probably get the exact details of this wrong, but he had not been able to win the NXT title and he was wrestling Neville and Pac, and he had a chance to hit him, take a shortcut and hit him with a chair, and he didn't. I love, there's a really famous match between Tully Blanchard and Magnum TA. It was an I Quit match. And Magnum TA had a spike and he was going to jam it into Tully Blanchard's eye and he was going to get revenge. And Tully Blanchard said, I quit. And Magnum didn't stab in his eye. Like he, you know, that was I'm bringing this around because Big E was my face of the week, because when they had that, you know, sort of fuck finish to his match with Apollo, he, you know, was like, no, I don't want to win like that, which is like an awesome, like, face thing to do and be like, yeah, like I'm a fighting champion. And I think that Big E is somebody who has been so charismatic and he's done so much with, I forgot that Sami Zayn wasn't the IC champion anymore. His legend lives on. Christmas was a blur. Not covering myself in glory here, but yeah, Big E, I think that if he is so charismatic and so good on the mic, he's worked as a heel, he's worked funny. And I think having him be a guy who's a fighting champion, like it's such an easy gimmick to add on to him. It's just like a good dude who's a proud champion who goes out and fights. Like that's a really easy guy to get behind. And he is so charismatic and so talented that I was just like, I thought that Apollo didn't get the win, but I thought that that did a lot towards rehabbing Apollo.
I honestly thought the same thing, quite honestly. He was a consideration to me of On the Rise, but it's like, you know, he lost. So, you know, technically can't really put him there. But, you know, I agree with you. Big E was just flat out amazing. And the fact that I think this is working towards a good build to work towards, you know, maybe a shot at a shot and a potential world title run possibly in this calendar year.
I would absolutely lose my shit if he won the Rumble and got a shot at Roman. If he lost the title, you know, and then, oh, shocker of shockers, we get him wrestling, you know, he's surprised. Like, I would be totally there for that feud. I think that it would also be awesome to see Roman get the chance to put over, you know, we've seen him put over guy, you know, he's been able to really have great feuds with guys who are not necessarily people the WWE has a long, you know, an interest in putting to that next level. And it would be super awesome to see him have a match with somebody who is somebody who would really get a great rub from beating Roman Reigns.
Yeah, that would be really awesome. So, heel of the week, who do you got this week?
I'm going to go with somebody who's not going to get into Jericho and his super spreader thing, but MJF and Jericho, I thought that Inner Circle promo, like the whole thing of Jericho like teaming up with MJF, and so you know that this, and I like the we'll get more into this in a little bit, spoilers, but yeah, I thought that it was just very heelish. I thought that, you know, these two arrogant assholes deciding like, yeah, we're a tag team now and we're great, it was like exactly what they should have done and was perfect. And I just think that he is so much as somebody who, there's certain people who are just better as heels. The Rock is one of those guys. I'll die on that hill. And Jericho is somebody who his face, you know, there's not a whole lot of change in his face versus heel character. And I just like him as a heel so much more. And I think that MJF is somebody who's such a natural heel that like them together, I am looking forward to them doing something screwy to beat Santana and Ortiz. And then I'm looking forward to them being a tag team.
Yeah. Like you said, spoiler, we will touch on this in a moment, but I can completely agree with you. To me, the heel of the week is the Roman Reigns heel of the week. It's Roman Reigns again. I just thought that he was once again phenomenal with the way he was directing things. I don't think I've ever seen any kind of intentional, it's been a long time since I've seen a seriously intentional, like, I'm going to direct who wins this match, even though I'm not in the match, the way that he and directing Jey Uso to do so. Sorry. I've never seen anything like this, and he's just completely running the show there. And so it was easy for me to just go right back to our usual Roman Reigns.
He's like the menace that he has, like the legitimate, there's something, and he's a guy, we've talked a little bit about guys benefiting from the lack of crowds. And I think that being able to do things a little quieter, a little smaller, is that there's something in his, like, and some of it goes to Adam Pearce as well, but like the fact that like people seem to be legitimately, like there's a real menace to him in a way that he's not doing it and like, oh, I'm gonna rip your, but like you call me stupid? Like, and it's like, oh no. It's like the scene in Goodfellas where Joe, like part of why that works when you first see it is that you've seen this character who is such like kind of off his rocker and is so, you know, at that like insecure that like, you call me a clown? Am I funny to you? Like, yeah, he's my best friend, but he really might, you know, if he thinks I've like, I'm not even intentionally insulted him, but he feels like I have, and he might rip my head off. And I think that Roman's just killing it with that. And I think that it's something that Jake Roberts was really good at. And it's that kind of quiet menace that I think that Roman's just.
Yeah. And you just see everybody just giving that person a really wide berth.
Yeah. And like, it's just really cool to see Roman is like, yep, you're no man, like not calling you stupid, like whatever it takes to calm you down, like just please don't hurt me.
Gotta love it. So promo of the week, we both had the same thing. Why don't you just continue where you left off with from your heel of the week?
The promo with the Inner Circle, they're doing a really good job, AEW is, of kind of pushing and pulling at, you know, that you have this buildup of tension with the Inner Circle, and then it turns out to be kind of nothing. And so that when they eventually break up, it's going to be one of those things where it's really cool and it's really like, it's, you know, holy shit moment. But it's not going to be a moment where you're like, well, who saw this coming? Like, wow, that's a shocker. Like, why would they do this? Like, Jericho and MJF are assholes. Santana and Ortiz are like, wait, what? We're the tag team here. Why are you dildos coming in? And, you know, and then you have Wardlow's like, well, you know, what about me over here? You know, Hager, where they were like, you know, and
he was the one who wants championships. this year.
Yeah, I mean, I get, and so I think that it was just a really great job. One thing I realized about AEW is I'm trying to disengage from some of the, like, you talked about the internet wrestling community, and a lot of the people that I follow are big, you know, AEW fanboys. There's nothing wrong with that. But like the same way that Rick and Morty fans can kind of make me like kind of made me hate that show for a little bit, and somebody who loved the show, like, I'm just going to disengage and just like watch and enjoy it. Cause it's a really good product. And that promo was just a great example of something that like AEW does just really well with their layered storytelling.
Yeah, absolutely. The fact that they had, that Sammy G had called him a tag team whore.
Tag team slut.
Tag team slut, yeah.
Which is actually, I don't know why it was funnier to me that he called him a tag, like called him a tag team slut instead of a tag team whore. Like, there's just something about it that, like, the verbiage of it even that made me laugh.
But yeah, I agree with you top to bottom. The way that they layered it all, there's really top notch stuff to me. And like you, I do disengage. I read it just because I see it's there. Like, most of the stuff I see is in Facebook groups. And it's just comical to me. It's not the stuff that's going to ruin my day. It just reminds me that, like, yep, these types are still out there. And, you know, whatever is whatever.
One thing that I've tried to tone down as I'm an adult, and it is like the punk rock kid in me who like has this knee jerk contrarian. God, I was insufferable as a kid. But like the contrarian in me, like that there's, I like not let outside forces affect my enjoyment of stuff. And so I've, especially when like, I don't want to miss out on something that's like AEW is doing a lot of great stuff right now.
Yeah, and I'm glad that I've never allowed myself to like listen to that and just let my own two eyes tell me if I like it. And hell, if I'm in the minority when it comes to that, so be it. Match of the week. I'm going to go first, and I'm going to go back to where we were talking about in the face of the week. Big E versus Apollo Crews, I thought was just a phenomenal match. And yes, like just like you said, I think it did well in the beginning of rehabbing Apollo Crews, because he put on fantastic it was definitely heel like work for Apollo Crews, even though, you know, it doesn't look like a full heel turn. He was definitely acting heel-ish, but the way that he really drew and made Big E go emotional with the slap in between bells, I just top to bottom loved it. I had went back and watched that match again earlier today before I went to work, and it was just like, yeah, no, I my eyes were right the first time. This was a really, really good match.
I agree with you. I think one aspect, like, I've sort of, if he is turning heel, I've always been like, how could you, you know, I've accepted that everyone that I think is a natural face is also a great heel. How can you turn Bayley heel? How can you turn Sami Zayn heel? Like, they're such natural, wonderful baby faces. Like, oh, so like, I can't wait for like good guy Apollo Crews, who like just seems like a genuinely like, just like good hearted dude. Like, just be a bastard and like be, cause like, yeah, he's a good-hearted dude, but like he's also like, it's like what, 285, like all muscle, able to do like a shooting star press, like
standing.
Yeah, like yeah, he's ridiculously good. My he's match of the week, talented. I went with, and I'm wasn't the best worked match, but I really enjoyed the Sheamus Keith Lee Miz Morrison match. I thought that the turnbuckle spot you talked about, I thought that it actually, they did a good job of really getting over how good Sheamus and Keith Lee were without sacrificing Miz and Morrison, which I think is a fine line to walk. And I was just very entertained by it. I thought that it did a really good job of getting over Keith Lee and Sheamus. And if they were to be a tag team, I think it also sort of hinted that, much like The Bar and Shayna Baszler and Nia, and like any, you know, God, how many tag teams have we seen? Like, can they coexist? And then they end up being friends.
Hell, Jake Atlas and Isaiah Scott in NXT.
Yeah. It's, and so I was, I just thought it was really good. And I thought that if you're going to if you're going to shuffle Keith Lee out of a main event feud for at least the time being and have him feud with somebody, like, Sheamus is really good. Sheamus has been really good for about a decade now. Sheamus is back to, Sheamus is a guy who sort of cycles from overrated, underrated. And he cycled from, and we've talked about this and sort of the undue hate, but like, Sheamus is really good. And I think if you want to get Keith Lee over, like, letting him just having like a physical banger of a match with like a 20 minute match with Sheamus is not the worst thing in the world, to let people be like, to see the, you know, bask in his glory, as he would say, on the main roster.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, storyline that you need to be paying attention to, what do you got this week?
So I'm going with, like, I kind of want to know what happened with Alexa Bliss lighting Randy Orton on fire and how Triple H was involved. Where did Triple H go? Was he in on it? Has the Fiend murdered Triple H the way that he apparently murdered John Cena? I have a lot of questions. I think that the fireball is part of the mature storytelling, but I also kind of wanted to just kvetch a little bit. Why did Triple H, like, should they not have done something where like, they're going to have to explain how Triple H was involved. Like, I felt like he was a one-off because of
Drew COVID.
Thank you. But you know, I kind of like really was Triple H in on it, because he gets in the ring, the lights go out, he's gone, and Alexa Bliss is there and blows fire in Orton's face.
And I love, in one of those groups, I don't remember who it was. I don't even remember which group it was. One of the things that they did get right was somebody asked, is it me or is the digging the use of the fireball? And I'm like, old gimmick with a new spin. Absolutely dug it.
If you do a fireball right, it's one of those. I remember in 97 when Paul Bearer decided he didn't want to wear the makeup anymore. And they did where, like, Taker, I can't remember, I think it was his first title defense against Foley. He like lit the fireball, like flash paper, right by Bearer's face. And like, if you get it wrong, like, and it looks like it's really corny and really cringy, when you get it right, it's amazing. And they got it right. So I'm excited for it. What was yours?
Mine is the fissures in the Bullet Club / the Elite. The fact that the entire show, it was built up to be the Elite being the Jackson brothers and Kenny Omega fighting in the main event, only for Don Callis to, you know, snatch the mic and introduce the Good Brothers instead. And then to see both Tony Khan and the Young Bucks in the back with their jaws on the floor, basically. I just thought it was absolutely great. I can't wait to see what happens. I mean, you saw in the post-match melee that they kept Moxley from attacking the Good Brothers, and especially Kenny Omega, but they in turn wound up eating super kicks while Kenny Omega and Don Callis, playing the cowardly champions, just ducked out the back. So that was my storyline to be paying attention to, because I'm all in with what they're doing with this interpromotional work with the Good Brothers and Kenny Omega. I'm hoping this opens the door for maybe more in the future, but That's where I'm at. I thought that was absolutely fantastic. But no, go ahead.
I thought that that was great for AEW. The one thing that I was a little surprised about, that the they're gonna do, it's called Hard to Kill, is the it's actually this weekend. That's what I was surprised about it. I knew that makes sense to me. There's gonna be a six man where it is Kenny Omega and the Good Brothers against Rich Swann and the Motor City Machine Guns. Which, like, that match should be great.
Ooh.
First of all. Yeah. But, like, I was kind of surprised that they didn't show up. I mean, I get it. There's COVID and there's a whole, you know, bunch of stuff. But I thought that, yeah, I mean, I'm interested in it. I've for a while wondered, we all sort of predicted that there was going to be, the Elite was going to turn heel and that Cody was going to turn heel and that, you know, Omega's turned heel and the Bucks are going to turn heel. But, you know, I would be interested in seeing a fracturing of the Elite. I'm interested to see where this goes.
Yeah, quite honestly, it almost makes you wonder if the Bucks heel turn is a short-lived heel turn because of this.
If they want to do, you know, and if you need to get away from doing the interpromotional thing, you know, if you wanted to move away from that, you can have Kenny join the Bucks instead of the Good Brothers. So there's a lot of ways they can go, and it's still weird to me that we're doing, I mean, and when I say weird, it's weird in a good way that we're doing a interpromotional feud in 2021.
And especially with champions as well. I mean, the Good Brothers showed up on TV with their titles, and I think that's quite awesome. And the fact that, you know, Callis sold it all the way up to announcing the Good Brothers, your world tag team champion, because, you know, I thought nothing of it until he said the Good Brothers.
I have to be honest with you. I was shocked that was the not the main event. I thought that was, and that's something I'll give AEW credit for, was putting Darby in the main event.
Yeah, well, that was necessary. Speaking of that, if we're going to go off on this tangent for a quick second, is it me or was that TNT championship more than 15 minutes long? It seemed pretty close. I might have to go back.
There's always going to be, I mean, it's wrestling. They're always going to cheat with time.
Right. I get it. It was just one of those, you know, one of those little cute things that, you know, I just kind of,
I was like, I realized, I was like, wait a minute. So, yeah.
But yeah, so we're going to get out of here in just a moment, but do you want to plug anything before we do?
Again, I feel like I've gotten on a bite. I don't want to do too much lefty stuff, but in honor of, I know Martin Luther King Day is Monday. I think that he is somebody who is fascinating and an incredible human being. I think that too often his legacy gets reduced down to a soundbite. And I would just encourage people to take some time this weekend and don't read snippets, don't read excerpts, like find speeches of his, you know, the letter from a Birmingham jail, and really read.
That was a really great one.
Yeah. Read his entire speeches. I'm also going to plug the Steel Ring Post, a little less serious, the With Spandex Orphans. I'd also like to take a chance to plug, it came out a few months ago, but Bill Hanstock, who is a really good writer. He's LA based, wrote an unofficial.
Please send me the name of that book. I'm sorry.
Yes, I will. We promised you a great main event. And Bill is awesome. He's on Twitter at Sundown Motel. Check out his book. What about you? What do you?
Well, this week, I actually didn't really know who I wanted to plug. So considering I just got a fresh package in the mail today, I'm going to plug Lenny's Furry Slides on Facebook and Instagram. Lanique Tinsley does not only custom furry slide, she kind of gotten away from the slide game, but what she does do is she does handmade soap and deodorant and sea moss, which I just got a care package of all three today, which I'm really loving. It leaves my skin feeling absolutely fantastic, but not all gross like. So it, quite honestly, I've been using it solely for the last like 3 months, and really great choice. So Lenny's Furry Slides on Facebook and Instagram, by all means hit her up. And as always, if you have any problems on your credit report or you just want to get your credit score higher, get at me, official Ronel Tinsley on Instagram, Ronel Tinsley both business page and personal on Facebook. HarvestCreditors.com, where you can set an appointment, mention the Teen Turnbuckle podcast, and save $100 on starting your services with us, including the ability to write your living will, trust, and power of attorney. Before we get out of here, I also want to plug the entire IB Network podcast feed, the Mod Pod by Actively Lazy and his former roommate Paul have been absolutely fantastic. A pair of moderates talking about the crazy world of politics these days. Our boy Chief Keith doing the playoff playoff preview with our own very own Vince McMahon, RC Carlton, the Weekly Daily podcast with Joe Matz and Chief Keith. There's the IB in Sports Facebook group where we have a Patreon, $5 a month, and that will allow you to be commissioner for a day, levy fines, receive some of their inside gambling picks from Keith in Actively Lazy. Completely worth it. And yeah, the IB Sports Network, both Facebook groups and podcast feeds, man, you know, support the brand. And with that, that has been another episode of the Team Turnbuckle podcast. So for our absent Chief Keith Fleming, for the shooter Sam Howe, this has been Ravishing Ronel Tinsley, and we will see you guys again next week, guys. Take care.